welcome to another episode of Inside the Recording Studio. I am Jody Whitesides, and with me, as always, is Mr. Chris Hellstrom. How are you today, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good, I think, as a whole. Yeah.
Good.
How about you?
I'm doing all right as well. Working on a little bit of a sunburn, but otherwise, fine.
Oh, I don't have that problem. I would if I ever ventured outside, but I don't, so that takes care of that.
All right.
You know, British and Swedish skin, we don't tan very well as it is. So there you go.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Quite actually. So I'm rocking the studio tan.
What are we talking
speaking
about?
Of studio tan, topic today is we all have those cases where a mix just doesn't come together for whatever reasons.
Yep.
We got 5 tips to try to hopefully get beyond that point and actually be able to finish the mix that you're working on. I know, at least for me, I've done all of these several times. So sure. I think you have as well.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I have.
Fall on your sword.
That's right.
And yeah.
You have to once in a while.
Let's just go right off from the top. First thing that we kind of want to ask ourselves is, do you have a clear vision for the mix? Or are you just kind of like moving faders randomly and hoping something is going to happen?
How do you get a clear vision?
Actually, listening to it, just a quick listen. If it's your own stuff, I mean, if you're mixing your own track, you should probably have that already. But if you're getting tracks from somebody else to mix, is to listen to the track and see what does it call for? What kind of thing is it? Do I just slap my normal processing on the drum kit or whatever, or is this actually different? It's listening with an objective perspective.
Or an intent.
That too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, this is what I think this mix calls for. Am I pursuing that with what I'm doing now? Or am I just blindly like turning knobs and slapping on plugins?
How often do you feel like you're blindly moving knobs and slapping on plugins?
Thankfully, not very often anymore, but I know I used to, because it's like you picked up the latest tip on like, yeah, you should always do this. So, okay, now I'm going to do this on every track, whether that's, yeah, high pass everything up to 150, said somebody. Okay, let's do that on every track, you know, and you don't know. So I think we've all had those habits where we read something, whether it's in a magazine or internet forum or podcast, that somebody says to do this, and then we just blindly follow that without really taking into consideration why we're doing that.
I sent you something not long ago via Instagram about somebody that did that for the mastering stage of things, not necessarily for the mix stage of things.
Yeah.
And the general comment that crept up in the comments on this particular video were actually fairly consistent in saying, you just can't make a preset for that.
Yeah.
And I went and tried the idea. I could hear what this guy's idea was doing. But in doing it to the mixes that I was already doing, my mixes already account for some of those problems. And I realized that that's what he's doing. But I wanted to hear the difference that it would make just to hear the difference. It's subtle in some spots. In others, it's not. The idea there, though, is that you can't just blindly walk in, move a few faders with a preset or whatever, and be done most of the time. Because you don't know where the recording came from. You don't know how the recording happened if you're getting tracks from somebody else. And if you're doing it yourself and you screwed it up and you're not aware of that, that makes it harder. And that's the same thing for a mix. When you go back and you want to listen to something, I wouldn't necessarily say a quick listen, as you sort of hinted at. I would do an intent listen for something. To understand
that's probably
where
a better
I would get
word
a vision
of saying
of what's
it.
Going
yeah.
on.
But to cycle back a little bit on these advice that we can hear from all of these sources, it's not like they're necessarily bad advice. They're just not applicable to every situation.
Exactly.
You know, another thing I would say with this, if we sort of don't have an idea, is like use reference tracks and see what is a similar mix to a similar track at the same genre or whatever. What does that sound like? And that can help us as well to see and kind of own in on where we need to take it.
Oh, yeah. Especially if the client has a clear vision for that by saying, hey, I want it to sound like XYZ track. Okay, great. Let me listen to that.
Yeah. And then, of course, we can only hope that that's an appropriate
reference. Reference,
exactly. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So something like you recorded it in your bathroom and you go, yeah, can you make this sound like Fleetwood Mac's Rumors? It's like, no, I can't do that. What else we got?
The next thing is if there are too many issues in the multitracks that you've been given, such as pitch problems, noise issues that have to be fixed, that can take away from the flow of doing the mix, the art of getting into the mix, that kind of thing. The idea behind all of that is fix all that shit before you actually get into mixing, which is very helpful to have a listening session, so to speak, with an intent listen ahead of time. You can pinpoint things before you even get into actually doing the mix.
Yeah, boy, is this one I wish I had learned earlier. Yeah. You know, yeah, because I've had so many sessions where so much time is wasted not mixing, but fixing problems.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think that the faster you can kind of get through a mix, or at least to get a rough, you still have that objectivity about the mix. So the faster you can do that, I think that's better. At least when I got caught up in the weeds of having to say, oh, shit, there's a mouth click right there, or there's pitch issues here, or there's guitar noise, or whatever happens to be,
mm-hmm.
and you find yourself starting to compensate for those at the mixing stage.
Well, it's harder to do that, yeah.
Absolutely. That is a huge one for me that I've learned, that before you even start listening to stuff, just go through the tracks and see if there are issues. Sometimes they matter, sometimes they don't. I mean, we can get really anal about trying to repair stuff with RX or whatever, and I can probably be a little bit too anal with with things like that. I think ultimately it's worth it, and when you can just mix and not have to worry about the tuning or any of that.
Yeah, it's a good idea to do all the fixes, especially if you're working on an album's worth of material. Go through all of the tracks per song, do all the fixes for everything first, for all however many tracks. If it's an EP and it's 4 to 5 tracks, or if it's an album and it's 10 to 12 tracks, or if it's the latest Taylor Swift saga of double album plus an additional album released in less than 24 hours. Well, that might take even longer. But the idea is to do all those edits on all of that stuff prior to doing an actual mix for any of it. You'll keep your headspace, I think, in a better headspace in that regard.
Yeah, because you can then focus on mixing,
Sonic, right,
when it
yeah.
comes time to that. And then also, the same thing goes through when you're fixing these things. You're a little bit more attuned to the issues that might be present in the file.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of in that mode and listening for, oh, what's going on in that 6K range of the vocal or whatever.
Right.
But whatever happens to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to these changes, though, what's your opinion on, let's say that you're getting songs from somebody else to mix, of them doing the fixes versus letting you handle that?
If they've done the fixes and they're happy with what they're done, so be it, I guess. Unless they ask me to do something with it, then that's a different story.
Yeah, because I can sometimes be a little bit hesitant to have somebody do it, provided that they're not super comfortable with the tools.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these things can easily become weapons in the wrong hand. And then you end up with a different problem that can sometimes be harder to fix. Let's say if somebody's been super aggressive with tuning their vocal, for example,
mm-hmm.
and you're left with all sorts of artifacts, I would have rather been given
the raw
a vocal
file
that needed tuning
mm-hmm.
and have me do it.
Sure.
Because in the end, I think that's a better way.
I don't disagree.
Right. Another thing that can come up here is we're struggling with a mix and it's just not coming together. Can you actually identify what it is that is preventing your mix from coming together? What is wrong with it?
Well, that is probably something that comes with a little bit of experience and a little bit of age. and doing a lot of listening to a lot of different things.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
One of the things that can be problematic for people is whether or not the groove is happening in the song. Because if you have elements that are fighting each other in terms of the groove, that's going to make a mix feel like it's difficult to bring together.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one thing that I have noticed a lot is if there are arrangement issues mm-hmm. in the song, as opposed to just like a mix thing, and that might be why you're struggling. There could be like a boatload of keyboard ideas and guitar ideas all occupying the same space. And then trying to make all of those work together can be hard, mm-hmm. right? So it's making those decisions as well as like, well, what actually takes precedent here? What is the most important part of the mix? And then highlight that. And if you have such a relationship with a client that you can actually say, you know what? I think we need to lose this keyboard pad that's under here because it's just mucking stuff up. Mm-hmm. If it's your own song, of course, you carte blanche, you can just delete stuff. That is a really common problem. Or maybe it's just me. But like when you're writing and doing stuff, you might be spewing out all of these ideas. And they might be good ideas, but we have to sort of like kill our darlings sometimes. Mm-hmm. So just because that new synth that you bought has this killer pad section, but it's just not appropriate for the song, you have to be honest and say like, no, got to get rid of this. And identifying those things in your mix, for me at least, can do wonders when something is not like, oh, finally I got rid of that part and now it works.
The soul of the song came out.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we mentioned on the podcast here, but sometimes the fewer elements that you have in a song, or at least the fewer prominent elements that you have in a song, it can sound bigger. So it's almost like when you're adding stuff with the intent of making it pop or making it huge and just like bombastic, sometimes it can actually have the opposite effect to me. Mm-hmm. Or is that because now you have so many parts that the impact gets lost? So having some space to breathe and stuff, I think, is a good way to go.
And to reiterate the concept of struggling with the groove, that's another element that should be fixed before the mix if you're going to do any kind of timing correction on instruments as well. That'll help make the mix flow a little easier in terms of the groove of the song. And it doesn't mean that you're going to always grab the quantize button. Because yeah. That doesn't always work for every type of groove either.
Hard 16th notes just right. All the time. Yeah. That's also part of like recognizing what is working and what isn't working mm-hmm. and fixing these things first. Also, it comes down to like a part thing, right? Because we're thinking about a groove. And when I think groove, obviously as a whole, but a lot of times it's like rhythmic elements like drums or perhaps percussion, along with a bass line, whatever happens to be synth bass or electric bass or what have you. Sometimes it can be also that the groove is happening as far as like the bass and the drums go, but you might have a percussion part that just ruins it. Mm-hmm. Ideally,
that's an arrangement part.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so sometimes that's something I could just add a little interest. Again, there, sometimes it isn't working. Throwing that tambourine loop on there and it's just the accents are all wrong. It's like, well, either fix that, get something else, ideally have somebody play it, or axe the part, right? Mm-hmm. Because the groove and the feel is important, isn't it?
It is. For this next one, it's something that I'm experiencing right now.
And what is that?
That is having mixes that were given, so to speak, that have too much processing on them. The processing is stepping all over itself yeah. from one part to another. Like you use one EQ to do one thing and another EQ after that to do another. And the two of them aren't really working hand in hand on a particular sound. The mix in and of itself looks like a string of noodles that is slithering through your hands. It's at that point that maybe you're using too much processing. And that could be EQ. It could be compressing things too much. inappropriately, all kinds of things of that nature. Oftentimes,
reverb. Too much reverb. Right?
Too much of anything, essentially. If it's not working, it's not working, and it needs to be yanked. With compression, as I was about to mention, maybe you're compressing things too hard, or maybe you're not even compressing them hard enough, and what's the point of it even being there? When it comes to EQ, well, go ahead and answer that question.
I just wanted to fill in that is something that I know I've done a fair bit as well. Certainly early on in my adventures was trying to do things, or let's say EQ and compression especially. So let's say I would spend a while just working on the drums, mm-hmm. and I'm just soloing drums and working with it. And then moving on to, okay, bass, and then you do the same thing there. And then when you start putting everything together, it falls apart because mm-hmm. it's like it's not going to get heard in solo mode. I think that's a big lesson to learn there. And it's like getting sort of painted into a corner there with your mix. It's like, oh, it's nothing is happening. Start removing EQ and compression. All of a sudden, things can start coming to life. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean that you don't use anything, but it's the assumption that everything needs to be processed and sounding pristine by itself. It's just not true.
Mm, exactly. When it comes to the EQ thing, if I'm going by example here, the mix that was previously on this stuff had used match EQ, mm-hmm. trying to match the EQ curve of some other song for particular elements and forcing that onto the individual elements in this mix. And then it had required multiple EQs to get everything the same, which suddenly becomes, what the hell is going on here? And then you look at the automation and the automations all over the place, and it becomes more of a hassle to undo everything that has already been done than it is to just take all the raw multi-tracks and start with a fresh session and start again.
Yeah. And that kind of leads me into the last point that we have here, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like you're feeling like you're just losing control of this mix. You start removing EQs and compressors and it's still not helping a lot. I think it's a really good idea. It can be scary at first, but it's just to remove all processing, get rid of all the automation, and just start over.
Yes. You know,
and it's probably a good idea to take a step back at this point. Like, look, this is not happening. Go for lunch, take a break for a while, and come back with a new mindset and start again. And I think, and I will die on this hill, is that doing that will allow you to finish the mix not only with a better result, but probably faster than if you're constantly sort of chasing your tail and trying to fix something that down the street that you've already gone, mm-hmm. right? Again, that can be a painful one because we can think, oh, what if I forget what I did on the drums here? Well, don't worry about it because the mix is not working anyway.
Right.
So back off and try again, as it were.
To continue with the start over thing, as I am currently doing with a particular project right now, starting over with some mixes that are awful in a sense with the way they were originally done, instead of even attempting to use the same session file, I'm just using the original multitracks and starting with a brand new one. And in the difference of what's going on is that the session template that I'm throwing these into contains console emulation, whereas the mixes as I have them from where they were coming from, they don't have that. So That's removing all the plugins, all the automation, everything that was going on, the match EQs, the compressors, everything that was happening. They had stacked stuff into this session style of what they were doing, but most of this stuff can be contained into a console channel strip, and it becomes so much easier to deal with. And in starting over, just doing that, a lot of the items don't even need the painful amount of EQ and compression that they had put in. And that's starting with a fresh perspective, and it makes it so much easier. And then the automation becomes easier if there's any that needs to be done. It's a good idea to once in a while forget the original drawing board, take a break, as you say, go get some lunch, wait a day, whatever it is that you need to do to clear your headspace and bring in the multitracks. Now, there is one caveat to doing that with a lot of today's DAWs, in that Logic is capable of doing this. Luna is capable of doing this. Studio One, Ableton, a lot of these DAWs will package audio files inside the session file very arcane messaging or numbering or whatever it is that the companies decide to use to differentiate each piece of audio that goes in there. That makes it very difficult from a file management standpoint. And that can also be detrimental to a mix thing. So learn file management. Learn to get the files out. A lot of them will allow you to export files as multitracks to a folder. It's a very good idea to do that for the raw tracks so that you can always go back and start fresh if needed.
Yeah, and that's something I think we're going to devote in episode 2 here, because we got an email asking about this. I think it's a good idea to kind of revisit that.
Yes.
So we'll drill down a little bit harder on that. But one thing I wanted to touch on that before we put a bow on this is that you said you put it into your session template, you said put it into your mix template.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to really make sure that when you're saying that, that our listeners understand that you don't have presets loaded on these channels. It's not like, okay, here's my kick EQ and that's why it's going on the kick EQ.
Correct. Correct.
So you still have that blank slate, but it's just everything is the routing, and perhaps I don't think you even have like your favorite reverbs in there.
No,
but you have your console setup and your routing and things.
It's the console setup and the routing that it takes. Yes, that's it. I do not have preset kick sounds, preset snare sounds. That becomes too much of, I didn't record this, how do I know that preset's even going to work on it, kind of thing.
Right. And then we're back to like point number one, where you just
undo everything and start again, right?
Yeah. So that's an important point of distinction to make, I think. It's not like the mixing template doesn't have presets in it.
No, it is strictly set up for the type of console that I feel like the mix needs. And then it already has the routing of where everything should go. Type of thing, whether it's guitars, bass, drums, synthesizers, vocals, background vocals, what have you. All of that is set up for the routing, and it makes it very easy that if there's more or less of any particular instrument, for me to duplicate a channel strip as necessary to add more channels or quickly delete ones if there are too many in the template that aren't needed for the actual mix.
Yeah.
But aside from that, there is no preset definition of what each track does.
It's a relatively blank canvas.
Relatively blank, right.
Awesome.
Let's move on to our Friday finds. Chris, what have you got this week?
Well, for this Friday, I have a piece of music. It was a song that I came across and I was very excited about it. So I sent it to you and a bunch of other people saying like, hey, check this out. Really cool song, a local band, I think, from LA called The Strike, their latest single called The Getaway. It was something that really got me excited. It was like that some of the hookiest shit I've heard in a long time.
Well, there you go.
So, if you like your pop music, your pop rock stuff, great song, great band, The Strike, The Getaway.
If I'm not mistaken.
And what have you got, Jody?
Well, before we jump on me, if I'm not mistaken, I think the drummer is partly also the producer as well. Am I wrong in that?
I don't know. I think they're just a three-piece that do. So there's probably a lot of cross-pollination going on there within the band. I don't know much of their history. I know they've been around for a little while, because usually when I find a band, I go, oh, it's a new band. And no, they're not. They've been there for a minute. So, yeah. But cool stuff anyway. What do you got, Jody?
This week, I'm going with a bass amp simulation. It is by the awesome people over at Nembrini. They have released a plugin that is a recreation of the Aguilar Tone Hammer amp head and bass amp. Thus, cool. I'm going with the Nembrini Tone Hammer plugin for this week if you need a nice bass amp sim.
I think there's been a lot of great bass amp sims coming out lately.
Yeah.
That's exciting because I used to be very content with the Logic ones, and I am not so much anymore. So that's cool. I have to check that one out as well.
We move on. While we've got your attention, we ask that you go to InsideTheRecordingStudio.com and sign up for our mailing list. You'll need to be on our email list to be eligible for future giveaways. And we'll make sure you don't miss any future episodes of this awesome podcast. Send us an email at goldstar, G-O-L-D-S-T-A-R, at InsideTheRecordingStudio.com with the phrase Mix Fix. And you'll get something cool back in your inbox. If you have a topic or suggestion for Chris and I to explain in a future episode, contact us at the contact page and we'll put it into consideration for a future episode. With that, I'll say see you next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have an awesome day.